Hey there, and welcome to the Smart and Simple Matters show with your host, Joel Zeslavsky. You know, the word systems is a pretty generic thing, but I'm about to make it real and really useful for you. This is episode number 39. Well, hello there, you smart listener, you. I'm happy you're joining me for another episode. It turns out there are a lot more people like you listening to the show than a year ago. 8 times as many, actually, and I am grateful for that. You know, I'm also thrilled about an iTunes review that a gentleman named Mike left for me recently. He said, and I quote, "This is the kind of podcast that most of us need. We have way too much stuff going on and we're losing focus. We need to learn to eliminate what is unnecessary so we can focus on what's most important. That's what Joel helps us accomplish, and he does it well." End of quote. Well, if you're listening, Mike, thank you a ton for those nice words. I always appreciate them, whether they're on a blog post, an iTunes review, or anywhere else. All right, I want to get right into the meat of today's episode, though, but I got to share something with you first, something I am super duper excited about. You know that experience curating book that I've been talking about for the last 9 months? Well, it's finally done. Holy schmoly, it's finally done. I'm sending out advanced copies this week to friends and family and to the most helpful Smart and Simple Matters listeners or Value of Simple readers to get their insight. And I hope you are getting pumped up about having your own copy in February 2014 when it becomes publicly available. Oh, what a humbling, tiring, exhilarating, and rewarding process it is to write a book. I keep telling people, never again. But we will see what the response is like and what kind of tune I'm singing a year from now. I have a whole solo episode planned to break down experience curating for you, and that will go live about the same time that the book does. But I know I should not get too ahead of myself because today I'm talking systems, processes, organizing, and some unsexy stuff with the delightful Shanna Mann. We're going to explain why you want to be like the ant and not the grasshopper. Who is the better superhero between Batman and Superman? And we'll also dig deep into the words, as Shanna puts it, if the crops are crap, you're hosed. Y'all ready for this? Here we go. You are in for a treat. Heck, I'm in for a treat too, because my guest today is my good friend, Shanna Mann. I met her a couple years back in an online community called The Putty Tribe, and things have blossomed from there. Now, Shanna's mostly responsible for the fact that I'm in such an amazing mastermind group, which she happens to be in as well. And can I confess something? I shamelessly borrow her concepts, metaphors, and analogies all of the time, with her permission, of course. Shanna is the founder of Change Catalyst, an online business dedicated to helping solo entrepreneurs like me through coaching and unsexy yet highly effective products like quick and dirty bookkeeping and my personal favorite called Your Next 6 Months Forever. She also writes blog posts on Change Catalyst that make you think, who is this woman? And I mean that, of course, in the most flattering way. She's just a total systems geek like me, but hers have the kind of elegance and chutzpah that I can only hope to have someday. She lives in Virginia with her partner, Chris, and 2 old dogs named Ivan and Nutmeg that sure as heck need to be walked a lot. And she may even probably rather be gardening than talking to me right now, but thankfully it's not an option. It's the middle of the winter time, and I really can't think of any other Canadian whose first name starts with S-H-A-N and last name ends with N besides maybe Shania Twain that I'd rather be interacting with right now. Welcome to the show, my friend.
It's great to be here. That was quite the intro.
Yes, you deserve a good one. I guess one of my things is long intros, but I like to make sure that people know that I'm bringing on guests who are pretty awesome, and you definitely fall into that category. So it's fun to have you here. What do you say? Should we start where we normally start, with the seeds of awesomeness? Okay. So here's the deal with the seeds of awesomeness. This helps people understand a little bit more of how you came to be who you are right now. So if you could share one or two experiences that you had growing up, or maybe even something about the environment in which you spent your youth, that gives us an idea of where you come from and why you are who you are right now.
Well, I think the most obvious thing is that I grew up on a ranch that was like about 45 minutes from the nearest town. And when my parents were always big about everybody, you know, pulling their own weight and making their own way. And if you wanted spending money, well, you better earn it yourself. So we were always encouraged to have a job. But when you live 45 minutes from town, a minimum wage just doesn't even pay your gas. So we were always encouraged to figure out other ways of getting money. And I didn't even really think of this as building businesses or being entrepreneurial or any of those things. I just really wanted to get paid. I really wanted to make money. So, you know, because we didn't get an allowance or anything. You know, when I was a kid, I would sell like handmade crafts and bake pies and sell fruit out of the garden and just various stuff like that. And so I became kind of attuned to different ways of making money. In fact, I would ask the parents of my friends in high school, you know, like, what is it that you actually do in an office all day long? Like, why are people giving you money? So that's been always sort of foreign to me. And I have to say, I've never to this day yet worked an office job. So I don't really know what it is people do every day.
I'll tell you more about it. I know we've had this conversation before about what happens in a large corporation, being in one for over a decade. For some people, you're missing out. For other folks, it's a good thing that you've never been there before. I'll let everyone come to their own conclusion. But you're in the minority when it comes to folks who just have no concept of what this life is like, which helps us get a picture of where you are. Is there anything else that you'd like to mention? I don't want to prompt you or anything, but you have quite a story. And we can get into it later when it comes to the traumatic brain injury that you suffered in a car accident, or maybe even that summer that you spent in the oil patch. Would you like to get into that now? Or we can even get cranking on some systems and organizing and simplifying stuff. We've got a few questions in mind.
Well, why don't we leave that juicy stuff for the end to force people to keep listening and get into the systems, because that's where you and I really enjoy ourselves.
Yeah. Well, you're right. I talk to people all the time about simplifying and organizing and being money wise. And now I know that you have simplicity gems in you, in that cranium of yours that you could dig up for us. But your strengths, at least to me, lie in the organizing and being money wise domains of what I normally cover. So I guess let's start with this. What does it mean to you to be money wise?
Well, for me, let's go back to my family. So we have a fairly agrarian existence in a way that I don't think a lot of people in the modern world really compete with. So when my dad, you know, starts the year at this time of the year, he is seeing if he can apply for loans to cover his operating expenses for the rest of the year until he gets paid in the fall.
And this time of year is January, which is when we're recording this.
Yes, it is the deep, dark winter. Mm-hmm. So he's got to figure out his plan for the next year and budget for the next year according to his needs and any long-term planning. So I'm accustomed to having to pay careful attention to my resources. And for me, that's what happens. You know, that's what it means to be money-wise, is to, you know, plan for that long, dark winter, you know, be the ant and not the grasshopper, because you just don't know what Murphy's going to throw at you.
So what does that mean, though? Can you give us an example? How do you practice being money wise, whether it's with your budget or with your bookkeeping?
So for me, I mean, I always stay really tightly on top of the budgeting. And some people can keep that in their heads, but I really like to be able to like visualize where the money's going and where it has to go. So I have like big long lists of upcoming expenses that I keep a really close eye on. And I also have a list. Actually, here's my sticky note. Only Joel can see that, obviously. But there's a sticky note right on my desk at eye level of the expenses that are not necessary, but I'm working towards buying them in the next few months. So something like a shredder for my office or a logo for my business, which I've been in business for I don't even know how many years. And I haven't got a logo because it never was a money-making thing. And that's another thing. Spending money should be spent in order to get you more money. And I could never really see that buying a logo was going to be a solid investment on that front. So it's always been really a luxury.
So even building a brand of which a logo is part of, that doesn't inherently get you more money, but being able to brand yourself in a certain way may. I'm kind of curious because you mentioned you have this post-it note of things that are not necessary, but you would like to buy in the coming months. How do you define the things that you want versus the things that you need? It sounds like you've got some kind of internal calculation that you do. Can you share that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know. It's very every person's going to have a different internal calculus for that. But for me, for instance, I just bought a $1,200 course. And I'm doing it in installments, but the $1,200 course comes with a huge, like, it's a huge course. And it's a huge tapping of the expertise of marketers, Naomi Dunford, who I really admire. And it comes with a bunch of templates. So it comes with an entire launch system, including every cross-sell, upsell, and so forth that you can think of. And they promise every variation on the launch. And also they're going to share their calculus for determining what kind of launch you want. So that kind of expertise is going to pay off big. And that's why I'm willing to drop that much money on it. So the other thing that I do is also make sure that my overheads stay down as far as possible, because anything that you have to pay month after month is a liability to you. So, I mean, obviously I have to eat, I have to pay rent, but in keeping those down, that allows me for greater flexibility and greater resilience in my business so that I can weather the odd bad month here and there. And that's another thing that I learned growing up is that, you know, if the crops are crapped, you're hosed. That's a Canadianism for you.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I might use it sometime. Okay, but do you take a different perspective? We've been talking business so far, and you've been giving us your approach when it comes to your business, of which you have three. We may talk about that at some point. But when you shift from business Shanna to personal Shanna, does the internal algorithm, as you put it, change? Or do you basically stick with that approach regardless of what hat you're wearing?
I basically stick with that approach. You know, like simplicity, that's a way of life, a way of thinking, a philosophy. So when, you know, I'm a little bit more lenient, and I don't know that I would say I'm more lenient. There's a few things that I'm willing to indulge myself in my personal life, but they're not really crazy. I mean, compared to, I think, the average person, I don't really spend a lot in like hobbies or discretionary income.
Yeah, it doesn't take any money to go out to reddit.com and read through a whole bunch of subreddits, right?
Not really, no. Yeah. I'm easily entertained.
That's good. I am too. And I know a lot of other folks who have. Life just has a little brighter shine when you laugh easy and when you're easily entertained, especially when you can entertain yourself. But I digress a little bit. Maybe you can tell us, so we've been talking a little bit about the philosophical framework in which you live your life, but there has to be the execution of that, the tools and the resources that you use for simple budgeting and for being money wise. Do you have one or two that you just absolutely love that you think a number of other folks may want to be aware of or use?
Business or personal wise?
Either one.
Okay. Well, I'll give you one of each. So for the ladies in your audience, One of the things that really used to make me cranky in terms of my monthly outgoings was tampons. Do you have any idea how expensive tampons are for something that you're basically going to use once and throw out? Like, it just drives me crazy.
No. Was that a rhetorical question? Because no,
I didn't. It was rhetorical.
Okay.
I thought maybe you might do the grocery shopping. But anyways, so I was, it would just drive me crazy, you know, $15 going out every month for this. So anyways, there's this thing called, I think the best website is probably called MySecretCup.com. And anyway, it's this, this is a family show, right?
Yes.
Anyway, it's this this little menstrual cup, which is a silicone cup that you use instead of a tampon, and it's totally reusable. So that has been one of something I picked up this summer, and I really get a certain sadistic satisfaction of not paying $15 a month for tampons.
All right.
Buy it once, and it's yours forever.
Good tip. So we like to focus on practical things here. And the unsexy side of life, of which this is a little bit unsexy, I'd say.
I thought so.
Okay. What about the business side?
The other thing, there are something in the United States, unfortunately Canadians are, again, hosed, but there's something called MVNOs. And I forget what that stands for, but it's basically cell phone companies that buy bandwidth from the bigger cell phone providers like AT&T, Sprint, and whoever the third one is.
Verizon, yep.
Verizon? Okay. So if you look them up, MVNO, on Wikipedia, you'll see a big list. And I went through one day, because this is the sort of person I am, and compared and contrasted all the different MVNOs for Sprint, which is who we had our cell phones through, and we're paying like $185 a month for. And I found Ting, T-I-N-G, which is this probably the best, well, it is the best out there for me. And we pay now like $35-$40 a month for cell services. And that's something I do with fair regularity, is I go through our list of overheads and I, you know, see what I can knock out.
So what's the difference between a list and a checklist? Because it sounds like I don't know what periodically looks like. Maybe it's monthly, maybe it's quarterly. You've got a reminder in your Google Calendar that pops up that says, hey, it's now time to review this checklist for these expenses and negotiate or reassess. Is there just a, oh, yep, yep, yep? Or do you have some rigorous checklist that you go through every time you do this financial process?
No, not really. Not any more than when, you know, you have a checklist for going through the entryway closet and being like, you know what, we've never used this tennis racket, it's time to sell it. It's more like you just, you know, I'm sitting there doing the books and I'm like, geez, I really hate that TV bill. That cable bill is driving me crazy. I gotta see if Chris can get his European soccer somewhere else. Because I'm sure that if I keep looking, eventually there will be a service that offers reliable European soccer coverage. Because that's the only reason we're holding on to it.
But how do you know when it's worth your time? Because I know you value your time very highly. So if I'm paying $50 for my cable bill, and I could potentially save $10 a month, but it's going to take me 20 hours to do the research and call and negotiate and sign the paperwork and get somebody to come out to my house and install things and all that kind of stuff. How do you know if it's worth it to take action and to make some kind of change in your financial life?
Oh, for me, it is also a hobby. So in the evenings when I'm just sitting around clicking on Reddit, that's how I found out about MVNOs. That's how I found out about Roku boxes. That's how I found out about My Secret Cup. So I just kind of have a few avenues that I'm watching. And when I see money saving tips go through there, I take a look at it and see if it's anything I can use. And I like to research things. So in the evening, I'll probably set my timer for 20 minutes and see what I can figure out in 20 minutes, if it's applicable to me and whether it's worth more time. Because sometimes, you're right, it isn't worth saving $5 here or there.
I'm surprised you didn't set your timer to 25 minutes, which is the length of a Pomodoro session, I believe. Do you still do that kind of things? We're starting to get into a little bit of the systems talk here, and maybe people can already get a little bit of an idea in terms of the approach that you take. Because I know you literally set a timer for 20 minutes. You give yourself that time to research, and when you're done, you're done. You have these kinds of systems that you've integrated into your life, which may be invisible, but to someone else, they might be thinking, really, I could do that. So, yeah, maybe you can start to tell us, is that 20 minutes that you give yourself significant, or is it roughly based on the Pomodoro technique, which I can link to in the show notes if people want to learn more?
Well, one of my to-do list softwares is called Kanban Flow, and it has a built-in Pomodoro timer, which I think makes it superior to something like Trello, even though it's very similar. So when I'm working during the day, especially if I have a bunch of little tasks, I'll knock them out using Pomodoros. I don't like to do it for creative stuff like writing unless I'm blocked. But in the evening, my to-do list is usually closed for the day. And so the 20 minutes is just to make sure that I don't wander off into a rabbit hole. And the only reason it's 20 minutes is because I have a bookmark to the egg timer, like the online timer, egg timer, and it's 20 minutes. Like, I just saved the 20 minutes one because I just sort of felt like 15 minutes was too short.
Okay,
no real reason. It's just that's my bookmark.
All right. By the way, the Pomodoro technique, for those who aren't going to go to the show notes and click, normally it's done in 25-minute increments. You work straight, you give yourself a 5-minute break, you go back for another 25 minutes, you break for 5 minutes, and then you go back and forth until you're done with these sessions. Some people do it 45 minutes on, 15 minutes off, but the principle is that you should be giving yourself regular breaks, both from a mental perspective, from a physical perspective, and also from a productivity perspective. It's pretty cool. I've tried to do things like that before. And I do have a quasi-Pomodoro technique. I normally go about 45 to 50 minutes when I'm working during the course of the day, and then I'll break. But that break could be 5 minutes. That break could be 15 minutes, depending on whether I'm doing bodyweight exercises in the basement or I'm walking the dogs, which takes more than 10 minutes. What are the kinds of things that you do? Because I know you spend a lot of time on, meaning working. But when you're taking those breaks, what kinds of systems do you have in place to remind you I should be doing this as a ritual during the course of the day?
I kind of suck at those. I haven't found anything that really works satisfactorily. So sometimes I will like go and make myself a cup of coffee. And that works okay, except sometimes I find that I've taken drank 6 cups of coffee in a day. And that's not very sustainable, even for someone like me. off and on, I'll get up and I'll do some yoga stretches, and that works okay for me. In the summer, I try to go outside and pull a few weeds. That's really meditative, and it's not too long before the sweat's trickling down my head, and I'm like, oh, okay, that's enough of that. I'm ready to go back into the air-conditioned house. Mm-hmm. So there's not really anything. It's just more like a mental reminder to be like, you better get up and move, or you're going to be sorry. So my body is pretty good about laying down the law that way.
Good. Yeah, sometimes we don't need something external to tell us what to do at any given point in time. We just listen to our bodies and they tell us, or listen to our mind if there's too many thoughts that are racing, and it says, okay, it's time for me to slow down and to stop, to meditate for 5 minutes, or to stare at a wall. I do that periodically. And actually, I'm looking to make a practice of it in 2014, where I spend 5 minutes every day towards the end of the day, literally just staring at a wall. I got the idea from a friend of mine, Colin Wright of Exile Lifestyle, and he says it's one of the best things that he's ever done, is just stare at a wall, a blank wall, for a period of time every single day. I'd like to try that out and see how it goes. But one of the things that I was really excited to talk to you about, there's a couple of articles that you've wrote on shannaman.com. One of my favorites is one, and I'm going to link to it in the show notes. It's called, If Systemization is So Effective, Why Doesn't Everyone Do It? Now, you and I feel that way, but we may not be preaching to the choir. And from my perspective, the gist of it was that systematizing your business, which you write primarily for folks like me, solo entrepreneurs and business people, but I found that you can apply these principles and techniques to pretty much any aspect of your life. It's the kind of deeply unsexy stuff that people just don't think about, that they don't want to do. And you even gave some examples which were relevant to me as an aspiring public speaker about the TED Talk speaker that makes it all seem just so effortless, but we don't see the 2 hours of day or daily systematized practice that they performed for months before they even got on the stage and started doing it. So I guess my main question for you is, Batman or Superman? Who's the better superhero?
Come on, you know that one.
Why don't you tell us?
Definitely Batman.
Why?
because Superman's perfect. He doesn't have to do anything special to win the day. So who can really relate to him? But Batman became a superhero through his own, well, admittedly his own fortune, but also his own misfortune and his own stamina and toughness and just willingness to be super. And that's not something that, I mean, that's something anybody can aspire to, unlike Kryptonite Boy.
So Batman needs processes, he needs grit, whereas Superman just is.
I mean, yeah.
He can do whatever the heck that he wants. Bullets literally bounce off of him.
Yep.
Okay. So from a practical perspective, though, do you have a tip or two of how we can be more like Batman in our day-to-day?
Oh, just one or two?
Well, start with one or two, and you can keep going if you like.
The thing about Batman is that he knew what he wanted to accomplish. And I think that that is probably the single most important thing that you can do is to know what you want to accomplish. Because it's, especially with, you know, the internet open in front of you all day long, it is really easy to just get dragged, you know, like, oh, there's that cool, funny cat video, and I'm going to click through there, and I'm going to watch three of those, and I'm going to read the comments, and then I'm going to do this, and then that. And it's really, really quickly you're down the rabbit hole. Even if you think you're doing it smartly, you know, you're networking or you're doing research, if you don't go in there with an objective, you're not going to last very long. Like, it's going to take you forever to get that objective accomplished if you ever do. So oftentimes what I'll do, you can't even see the number of sticky notes that I have on my desk, but oftentimes what I'll do, if I'm having a bad day in terms of not being able to stick to one thing, I'll make a sticky note and I'll stick it on the corner of my screen, or I have some sticky note software that does that too. And I'll say, this is what I'm doing right now. And that's actually something I'm experimenting with right now is having a to-do list, which, you know, to-do lists are to-do lists. But on the other side, have an objective and a results list where you write down your objective. And then you write down what happened. Because too often you'll be like, I'm going to write this post. And 2 hours later, is the post written? Maybe. Might be 90% written. You know, is it scheduled and ready to go? Probably not, because you got distracted by your email and you just wanted to check this one thing on Wikipedia and down the rabbit hole you went. So it's really immediate feedback for me to be able to be like, okay, so I went to do this post and then I realized that I haven't updated YNAB today, so I should stay on top of my bookkeeping. Easy win, right? And instead, then I went and I did some research and, you know, suffice it to say that staying on top of your objectives is key.
So wait, is it understanding what you're trying to achieve, or is it impulse control as well? Because it seems like there's two factors at work here. One is your brain's constantly telling you, based on the flashing light on your smartphone or somebody walking into your room, if you're working or your area. I mean, we're constantly being interrupted. But mostly by electronics, but often by people as well. So one of them is removing distractions. And another one is internally we're distracted and we have all of these impulses saying, no, 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 don't do that thing that you're doing right now. Wouldn't it be awesome if you were doing this other thing instead? How do you control those impulses?
Yeah, you mentioned trying to get rid of the distractions. That's my go-to because of the concept of decision fatigue and limited willpower. So the more that you use your willpower, it gets depleted easily. And I can be using that decision-making potential to do other stuff. That's actually why I started systematizing, because I'm a scatterbrained person and I don't really do things in a habitual manner. I'm really bad at doing things in a habitual manner. So for me, the best way to get it to stick would be to write it down, write down an SOP or a checklist, and then do it the same.
SOP, standard operating procedure.
Yeah, sorry, yeah. Jargon. And to do it the same way every time in the hopes that someday that would stick in my brain.
Yeah, you and I both have trouble with the whole sticking in the brain thing. You said that you have trouble making things stick, and I know you've had an issue, a traumatic brain injury. Me, my brain is just naturally Swiss cheese. But we both, we come at it from different angles, but we know that there's limitations to our brains and how much we can rely upon them or what they can empower us to do. So creating systems, some kind of external framework to use the tools and resources that have that technology have created for us, allows us to basically turn a weakness, which is a poor brain or structure, into a superpower, if you will, which, you know, we've talked about before. This whole experience curating process that I have, putting my life into spreadsheets, it was because I had a terrible memory and I wanted to actually remember the cool things that happened to me. So I used systems, I used tools in order to create something from a weakness and turn it into something that's really cool and useful for other people. How do you systematize your life in a way that's valuable to other folks?
Well, for one thing, it really matters to me to be dependable. So I would constantly have, you know, basically nightmares, cold sweats about having things fall through the cracks and not have people be able to depend on me. You know, especially back when I was running that contracting business and I had employees and clients and, you know, deliveries, and it was insanity. And I have luckily, you know, revamped my business life so that fewer people than ever rely on me, which is the way I like it, because it takes up a tremendous amount of bandwidth. But it's important to me to be reliable and to be able to give the same level of service and attention and warmth that to, you know, anybody I interact with, whether it's a client or somebody on social media, that they would have when I was at my best and my freshest. And for me, that's what the systems help me do is, and I think that's a really overlooked part of them, is that you can rely on systems to help you be your best, even when your brain's not fully online.
So what does that feel like? What's an example of that?
Well, for me, it's like operating on muscle memory. Have you ever, like, I can't really think of a good example. I don't know. For me, it would be like shifting gears on a truck, you know, where you do it sort of without even thinking about it. You're clutching and shifting and, you know, clicking your signal light or whatever you need to do without really, you know, you're listening to the radio or doing whatever. And for me, that's what it is when you know, I've got my systems in place, is that everything is executed in this really choreographed, beautiful manner, without me having to really be focused and tense about it.
Okay. Well, I'm kind of curious, and you mentioned you keep going back to old businesses that you've had and other businesses. I know you've got three businesses right now. You've got Change Catalyst, which is a publicly facing thing, but then you've got a copywriting business, and then you also have book reselling that you do as well. So you're trying three businesses operating for the most part by yourself, and you have to put a lot of structure in place. So organization is one part of it. And I talk about organizing all the time, mostly non-physical stuff. Although you have physical things that you need to organize, like massive number of books. What role does organization have in systematizing? Are they synonymous, or is one reliant on the other? What does that look like to you?
Well, they're not synonymous, but you can't systematize until you're organized. Like, there's always a period when you're doing something new where you can't systematize because you don't know the best way to do things yet. So if you stay organized and you keep good notes and you have all your information in one place, when you're really confident that you've, you know, discovered the best way, for now, that you need to do things, then it becomes fairly easy to systematize because all your stuff's in one place and you can make an SOP, a standard operating procedure, and write out all the instructions, you know, for yourself in your semi-brain dead state, and then, you know, let it go because you've got everything in one place. And for me, that's things like creating bookmark folders in Chrome so that everything I need to do certain tasks launches at the same time. Because otherwise I have to spend this time in my brain being like, okay, so what else do I need to do the weekly, you know, bookkeeping? Where's that spreadsheet? Where did it go? Google Drive is terrible for filing things. I have to remember what I named things. I can't do that. So they all have to launch at the same time. So that sort of organization is just so that when that things have a sort of internal order and structure to them, that enables you to latch onto it easily. And from there, you can easily systematize. You have to be organized first.
But it sounds like you take that internal organization and you turn it into something explicit and external, like your standard operating procedures. You actually have a Word or a Google Doc that shows you a number of items that you need to do in sequence. Like you said, a standard operating procedure for common tasks that you do. For people who aren't accustomed to doing that, Why should they bother putting that much work up front into something that, I mean, who knows? That's the thing about systematizing is it's wonderful until something changes and then your system changes. So is it worth it to create these things that you constantly need to update?
Well, for me, I always recommend people start with something that's hard, something that they avoid doing, something that really is stuck or really sucks for them, because that's where they're going to see the biggest win. And so bookkeeping is actually a really good example of that. I happen to like bookkeeping, you know, because you get to record all the money you're making, and hopefully your expenses are as small as possible. So that's really satisfying. But a lot of people hate bookkeeping because they don't feel like they know what they're doing, or they don't know where everything is, or they feel like money is missing, or maybe they're losing money. That is a really terrible situation to be in, and people avoid it if they can. But oftentimes it's just that they need so many different things, so many pieces of information in order to get organized. And they often leave it to the last minute. So it takes, you know, vast amounts of whatever dwindling mental resources they still have to get that moving. And so I often tell people, and that's why my first product was Quick and Dirty Bookkeeping, was to show people how bookkeeping can be easy and painless and like take you half an hour a week. So yes, it needs some updating, but really it's more like you get organized. Then you systematize and you write out your SOP. And I always recommend that people write out their SOP as if they had to explain it to a really dim-witted intern, because that's you at the end of the day. And then after like 2 to 3 weeks, or, you know, the number of times that they use it, the SOP gets pretty well stuck in your brain and you don't really refer to it as much. So what I find happens after like 5 to 6 months, people will open up that SOP, refer to it, and be like, oh, no, that's wrong. That's wrong. No, that needs to be changed. And they can change it fairly quickly and just update it. And it's only when you let it go, when you fall off the wagon, that it becomes really painful to update.
So you need to have a system in place to remind you to reevaluate the things that you've previously created. I do that kind of thing. If people actually looked, when I first started podcasting, I had a 25-page document that I had to walk through from how to prepare my environment for podcasting. Okay, is my cell phone turned off? Because I don't want it ringing while I'm interviewing somebody. Is my water bottle filled up? Is the shade behind me turned off? Are the dogs put in a place that they're not going to annoy me, or they're not going to bark at the mailman? So there's the checklist kind of stuff. And then there's the post-production. And I relied on that 25-page document very heavily for the first maybe 5 to 7 episodes that I did. But now I barely look at it. I mean, maybe if I update a service provider that I'm using for some part of my podcasting workflow, I'll go back to the document and reassess it. But one of the really cool things that I found in creating these standard operating procedures for myself is that when somebody else could use it, I can send it to them, and they might not use it verbatim, but they can use it as a template so that they can create their own customization and they can riff off of something. Because what we do on an individual basis, business, personal, spiritual, or otherwise, a lot of other people need to do. So it's pretty handy, and you're looked upon very favorably when you can just flip something to somebody else and be like, here, read my 25-page document. I got it all covered, folks. Do you have that experience too? Do people come to you knocking on your door saying, can you share that kind of resource with me?
I think that people are often intimidated by it. I'll tell them about it and they'll be like, oh, that's awesome. And then I'll be like, well, I can send that to you if you want. And they'll be like, no, no, that's, no, that's, oh, no. But I did see your 25-page document when Sarah Goshman and I were considering doing a podcast. And it was really useful because, you know, you had links in there and you know, step-by-step instructions. And it was very nice to be able to see that all in one place because it's slightly overwhelming, yes. But when you see it all in one place, it's not actually overwhelming because, look, it has concrete sides. It doesn't, you know, spread its tentacles into every aspect of your life the way that an undefined project does. That template that you showed us had, you know, steps and lots of the steps, you know, once set up, never had to be done again. And the rest could be simplified because you had linked to the instructions. So once certain things were in place, it could be easily streamlined and it would be down to like an unintimidated 2 to 3 pages. And one thing I will say, though, and I'm going to take this opportunity to brag you up a little bit. Oh, is that I have been able to get into social media a lot more easily since you kind of made the point that sharing resources with people was really valuable to them. Because I always felt sort of like that sharing things on Twitter or whatever was sort of like a me too thing. Like, hey, I read this cool article. Look at me. Or like, yeah, kind of.
I mean, most people take a click here, I'm awesome approach to it. That one, hat tip to Jay Bear for the click here, I'm awesome approach. Yeah, but I get it.
So that's been really useful to me because I have obviously a huge folder of like resources and articles that I have found useful and implemented in my day-to-day life that I just, whenever I need to tweet things these days, I just dip into it. And, you know, I've started some really fruitful conversations that way. And for that, I have you to thank for you know, kicking my butt about it.
Well, I'm flattered. I don't know. I may be blushing a little bit. But you talk about fruitful. So where is the low-hanging fruit, though, when it comes to systems? For people who aren't accustomed to thinking in this kind of way, in terms of organizing first and then putting systems and structure in place, are there one or two topics or things that you would recommend somebody could do today? Like quick wins, if you will. Is there something easily accessible that people could start today if they want to get a taste of the world of systems?
Well, I don't know. I think it just really depends on where your trouble areas are. I will say that, you know, in my like free course, Be the Boss, I talk about first order systems and second order systems. And the first order systems are always where you see the most wins. So that's sort of like cleaning out your closet and being able to reach your accessories because they're not dumped in a pile in the corner anymore. You know, they're all nicely arranged on the back of the door. And so those pay off immediately in the form of time saved. And so anything that you spend a lot of time on, you can get organized and do that thing like where all of them launch at the same time so that you get that time saved and that big win. The other thing that I think that people need to do is like make a big list of all the things that have to get done in their life in order for their life to keep moving. So that would be like buying groceries and like chopping vegetables and, you know, vacuuming the house and cleaning the bathroom and, you know, answering the email from those people that email you and just, you know, writing blog posts and everything that has to be done or your business will grind to a halt or your life will grind to a halt because we forget those things. Those things are habitual to you. So you totally, they're like a great big blind spot in your head, like a whiteout. Mm-hmm. So when people get down on themselves about like how much or how little they're getting accomplished, it's because they've forgotten all of those things. And they're trying to shoehorn like 6 hours of new projects into a day where they might have an hour to devote to new things. Everything else goes into keeping life moving. And so if you make a big list of those and then start to either winnow it down, because sometimes you're doing useless stuff, or systematize it, then you're gonna get back that time that you spend.
I got it. So that useless stuff, though, sometimes it's almost more important to eliminate the useless stuff than it is to not have a blind spot on what you should be doing. And that kind of brings up the concept of a to-don't list, which I heard people talk about to-don't lists in the past. I'm like, oh, geez, really, people? I mean, we all have enough lists in our lives. Do I really need another list that says to-don't? But I created, you have this course, Your Next 6 Months Forever, and one of the exercises that you have people go through in that course is creating a to-don't list, and I created it for the first time. I've got it up here on my in my home office on the board. There's stuff on there like, don't forget to pet your dogs every day. In the past, I used to go, Emsky and Lucia, my golden retriever and Samoyed, sometimes I used to go a couple of days without really ever touching them, and that's not cool. Like, I want to do that more. So my to don't was could be confused with the to do, but it was basically like, don't forget to pet your dogs. There's common things on there, like I've got a bad habit of picking skin on my fingers. It's kind of gross, actually. And that to don't list, when I start doing it, I can look at it and be like, dude, that's on your to don't list. Don't do those kinds of things. How important is the to don't list compared to the to do list?
Well, we always make a conscious decision to do things, but we rarely make a conscious decision to weed out the things that are not useful to us. So we just sort of, I think we kind of assume they'll be crowded out. But the problem is they're already habitual. So they have a lot more staying power than the new things that you want to replace them with. So even just as a sort of simplicity thing where, you know, one thing in, one thing out, you have a lot of stuff in your life already. Like, what in it is not being useful to you? And habits count as much as anything else. Like, for me, in the evenings, I have a bad habit of, like, mindlessly scrolling Reddit. And not even, like, the good articles where you're reading, you know, interesting conversations and insightful articles. Just the crappy memes, page after page. And so I have a to-don't of no mindless browsing. Like, I have to be interested. So for me, that's the ongoing battle. And it's tough because sometimes at the end of the day, my brain is totally tapped out. It's like, stick a fork in me, I'm done. And you mentioned a really good thing, like, of staring at the wall. That's a great thing to do because your brain needs to rest. And we don't really do things that let our brain rest anymore. You know, we're all pretty well knowledge workers and our pursuits are largely intellectual. So there's never like, there's no chopping wood, carrying water for people, which is like a Buddhist phrase of like what happens when you reach enlightenment, chop wood, carry water, like life goes on. Mm-hmm. So like mindless things, like, and that's one reason why I don't really advocate getting rid of, like, some people will say, like, delegate everything but your most useful things. Well, you know, somebody's got to do the dishes. I don't care if you have kids, you know, somebody's still going to do the dishes. And that is really restful times, very meditative. Vacuuming, very meditative. Mowing the lawn, very meditative. Like, you can use that time. You don't have to view that as time wasted. That's your brain's rest time.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. So I'm going to be interviewing Andy Pudicombe, who has a great TED Talk about mindfulness, and he's the founder of Headspace, and his whole premise is meditate for 10 minutes a day, and awesome things will happen to you. We might spend an hour every day working out and making sure that our physical body is great, but what about our mind? Isn't it just as important to give our mind the kind of nourishment that it needs or the kind of exercise that it needs? And often with a mind that's just racing all the time, you need to give it a rest. And there's so many different ways to do that. Yeah, one of the other things that I want to talk about as well, you know, we talk about this concept of a to-don't list. And I love the fact that you mentioned that habits can go on there too. I've got a lot of habits that are on my to-don't list. That's just one part of Your Next 6 Months Forever. One of the other things that I really liked about it was the 5-year plan. I'm a huge planner, even though those plans don't manifest in the ways that I would expect them to, it's still really useful for me to do that. Who's this course for, and what would they get out of it if they took Your Next 6 Months Forever?
Well, it's primarily for like freelancers and solo business owners, but I think most people would be able to use the framework. Like the specific tools, some of them are best used for business. like the marketing calendar, for instance. But the definitely the first half and part of the second would be useful for anybody. It's just almost every client that I've had has said some version of, you know, I have these big visions, but I just can't seem to figure out how to get them down to reality. And that's basically what your next 6 months forever is for. Because a lot of the times people will make a big, awesome plan. Like everybody's probably, I think everybody has sat and done as an exercise a 5-year plan. It's people give that advice all the time because it's a great way for orienting yourself in the big picture. But then they sort of just drop it. It's sort of like, okay, sera, sera. And they move on to, you know, the nitty gritty on the ground details of day-to-day life. And the way that your next 6 months works is to bring you to the present from 5 months down or 5 years down to a year, down to your next 6 months, down to your next 3 months, down to your next month, down to this week. Step by step, so that you train your target on that big picture plan for yourself. So if that description sounds useful to you, you're going to get use out of your next 6 months forever, regardless of whether you have a business.
Yeah, being intentional and being present, those are things that I struggle with a ton, and I know a lot of other folks do as well. Seems to be a Western thing. I don't know that a lot of other folks in different parts of the world have these kinds of struggles, but it's cool to have that framework. Any reason why we might want to jump on your next 6 months forever soonish?
Well, I set up a special discount for you guys for until midnight on January 31st. You guys, the first 10 people can get 50% off your next 6 months forever using the coupon code JOELZ or JOELZ for you Americans.
Oh, yes, JOELZ. That would be weird. that's cool. And I'll make sure that there's a link in the show notes to your page where people can get on that. I've taken it. I don't normally do this, and people who listen to the podcast regularly know this. I don't normally make any kind of personal plugs, but I've taken the course. It's helped me a ton. I'd also love to recommend that people go to Change Catalyst, and Shanna has a members library. She mentioned Be the Boss, which is free. It helps you, quote, be one of those well-put-together people that everybody aspires to be. And I'll link to that, of course, in the show notes as well. Is there anything we didn't talk about that you'd like people to know?
I think the problem that people have is they assume that change is going to be big and that they have to basically start from scratch to do it. But I really like the concept of Kaizen, which is to make little tweaks to what you already have in place. Because the whole concept of tearing things down and making them anew tends to just produce its own crop of problems. So if you do Kaizen and you make little changes bit by bit, those are going to add up without setting off as many unintended consequences. So I would encourage everybody to just practice that Kaizen and just try to do things a little bit better every day.
Cool. Well, is there anything else we should do now? Perhaps someone's listened to you and they've thought, hey, you know what? That's kind of groovy. I'd like to explore more. Can we find you or the stuff that you do online somewhere?
I am on shannaman.com, and it's spelled just like it sounds, two N's. And I think I probably comment the most on Google+. There's even a special group called the Guild for people who want to commit to that, you know, being better day by day. So you can sign up and follow me, or I don't know what the nomenclature is, but yes, I suppose circle me on G+ if you like and say hi.
Well, I just want to say thanks a ton for being on the show, my friend. It's been fun today, and if people are as jazzed or partially as jazzed about systems as we are after hearing us talk, there's a lot more that you and I have to say about it. So just know that this is not the end of the conversation for all the folks who are listening. There's a lot more resources out there for you, and there's a number of other role models who we aspire to be when it comes to putting organization in place and simplifying through systems, which is not something that we talked about today, but which is definitely something that you can do. So thanks again, Shanna.
Thank you.
Howdy again. I hope you got as much out of that conversation with Shanna as I did. Maybe you are closer to being the ant and not the grasshopper. Maybe you think that Superman is way, way better than Batman and need to explain why. Why don't you leave a comment with your thoughts on this episode at valueofsimple.com/SASM039, either at the end of the page or via the voicemail feature on any page in Value of Simple. You will also find all of the resources that Shanna and I discussed in the show notes, along with a link to Shanna's Your Next 6 Months Forever, which she's offering at a 50% discount with the code JOELZ, J-O-E-L-Z, until January 31st, 2014, and only for people who like smart and simple things. I don't get a commission if you purchase it. I just believe in its value as someone that's already been through the whole thing, and I want to see other people use Your Next 6 Months Forever to lead a more intentional life. Now, I know 2014 is young, but it is never too late, or early for that matter, to think about how this year, or any other year, can be a seriously groovy one for you. If you would like to help make my year groovy, please consider leaving a review of Smart and Simple Matters on iTunes via valueofsimple.com/iTunes. There are handy instructions in all the show notes on how to leave an iTunes review if you need them. And the more reviews, the more people discover the show and learn how to rock at all the really unsexy stuff that actually matters. Okay, I better wrap this sucker up. I invite you to continue the conversation elsewhere, like in the show notes, by finding me on Twitter at Joel Zislowski, leaving a voicemail on Value of Simple, or popping a quick email my way to joel@valueofsimple.com. Keep simplifying, keep organizing, and keep being money wise, my friend. And thanks again for listening to another episode of the show. It's now time for your partner in simplifying to sign off again. You've just listened to the Smart and Simple Matters podcast with Joel Zislowski, creator of all things Value of Simple.